Mini episode 1932 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1932. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. Ben is, of course, the FDH Hoops analyst. And we are leaving up here, for those catching the video feed, since our most recent mini episode was 1931, when we were celebrating Ben now going 12-0 lifetime on NBA Finals picks on the show since 2015. We'll leave it up for this segment since it's hoops-oriented as well. There are times when Ben is on when we deviate outside of hoops and we do some other things here, sometimes with TV, sometimes on the streaming business. We do have coming up at the end of the month here, the last season of The Bear being released. We'll have to definitely come back in and talk about The Bear. But in the interim, we are here to talk about the 2026 NBA draft. Now, we already did a breakdown after the NBA draft lottery. Also a live show for the draft lottery. So we've covered it in some detail, and we will be covering it in more detail as it happens with another live show here and an FDH Lounge episode as opposed to all of these mini episodes. We get to harken back. I think this will be episode number 162 dating back to the station days. And speaking of the station days, at the Sports Talk Network, where we had it was 152 episodes at the time before the mini episode era started, after we broke away from the late lamented Sports Talk Network, one of our great colleagues from there and somebody who used to share a morning show with Ben Chu, I believe this was like circa 2009, our old friend Don Peterson from Peterson Media, he will be the third man in the booth. Ben tasked me with it. He said, look, Ricky, it was a slog for us last year. We got to get a third man in the booth. Don had already reached out to me for NFL draft coverage, but it was while it was happening on Facebook and I missed it. And I was like, well, buddy, since you're interested, we got another thing coming up here. So ask and ye shall receive, Ben Chu.
Yes.
We have the reunion from the Sports Talk Network days. The three of us are back together to talk about the 2026 NBA draft. So that's the first thing to preview is getting back in with Don P.
Yeah, and it's going to be a really interesting show. Don P is Don P. That's all we're going to talk about today, right?
That's the most accurate way of summing him up, actually. Yes, Don P is Don P. He is a unique individual. The energy that he brings, if you're unfamiliar with him and with his show, which again, you shouldn't be, Peterson Media is out there for you to check out. But Don P will be in the house with us here, third man in the booth as we preview the NBA draft. And we talked about this a little bit, just kind of setting the table during our NBA Finals review when we were talking about what's coming up here in terms of this is the real start of the offseason. Even before July 1st with free agency, which is generally the last couple of years, it's been this kabuki dance of like so-and-so is a free agent, but we know they're not going to go anywhere. There's been a lot of that kind of stuff. There haven't been as many interesting free agents on the market. LeBron is probably going to change that to some degree this year, although we'll have to see what happens with that. But this is the real start of the offseason is with the NBA draft and setting the table for next year, and that you have – the three franchise player candidates at the top of the draft, A.J. DeBanse, a power forward from BYU, who, if you go back 2 or 3 years, it would have been the absolute consensus. This guy will be the top pick in the 2026 NBA draft. And I remember this was probably, first of all, right after that point in time, maybe about 2 years ago, another great FDH Lounge dignitary, our great friend, the late, great Anthony Patrone, said to me, that I've been hearing about this Darren Peterson guy. They're like, maybe he might be the top pick in the draft. And he had like some kind of tie to the Akron area. So that was how Anthony became interested in him. I think it was some kind of family tie. And I was like, no, Anthony, it's going to be A.J. DeBanse. It's clearly going to be. And then like you get into this season And a lot of people had Darren Peterson out in front. Yeah. But then he starts having these health issues, the availability. He's cramping up all the time. Come to find out that it is probably a creatine issue and that he was taking that to try to deal with his physical conditioning. Hopefully that's the case. Hopefully they figured it out. Hopefully it'll be addressed. And as we talked about previously, that Paulo Banchero, when he was at Duke, nobody even remembers it anymore. But that the issues that he had with hydrating and everything like that, he was losing like 7 pounds a game in college. So there's a recent precedent for somebody getting past this point. But we now appear to have gone full circle to where now that Washington has the pick, and I think they think that DeBanza fits in better, that like DeBanza is now back out in front, as opposed to it being neck and neck, or perhaps even Peterson being in front. Peterson would then be the consensus second pick for Utah. The consensus third pick overall is Cameron Boozer of Duke, the power forward, who a lot of people are comparing to Kevin Love as far as his ability to be a stretch four and impact the game in that way, that kind of high-level offense from the four position. From there, you get to Caleb Wilson, power forward center from North Carolina. He's likely to go to the Bulls at four, but that's a thing where, again, I bring this up all the time, and whenever I hear this about any of these players, like, I'm sure he'll learn to shoot at the NBA level. I mean, I made that joke about Ben Simmons in 2017. So, I mean, you know, like, I made that joke to Joe Stazek, our great friend, Philly media legend and FDH Lounge dignitary, and I was like joking, like whistling past the graveyard, like this guy's going to be a franchise player for you, but he's still got to learn to shoot. Yeah, that never happened. And I'm not saying the same thing will happen to Caleb Wilson, but there's a reason that on the FDH draft board that I am personally overseeing, and you'll see this Pro Hoops Draftology 2026 soon to be available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. In part on your firsthand scouting, I have Darius Acuff Jr. as the number four overall pick. Point guard from Arkansas, and you get past those top three picks that you have there and who's going to be going in those spots, and you go past Wilson, who's expected to go four. But to me, almost an equal story of the draft, which seems hard to believe because it's unusual to have multiple players who could become franchise players. But like, this is one of the greatest examples of strong depth at a position that we have seen probably in the 21st century. It's at the point guard position. And as I said during the previous NBA Finals segment here, when we were talking about De'Aaron Fox and that, like, might San Antonio want to kind of flip him now that they may not need him anymore with that young backcourt? Easier said than done because of the great depth in the NBA at point guard. It's been the golden era of point guard. The golden era is about to shine way more, Ben Chu. Yeah. We got a lot of these guys coming in, and point guard is going to be one of the most loaded positions in North American sports probably in the next 10 to 15 years.
Well, we have six guys projected right now to go in the lottery at this time that play point guard or are essentially the height that we would expect from a normal point guard. And, I mean, we have names too. Like, obviously, Rob Acuff, we got Keen Wagler from Illinois, Kingston Fleming from Houston, Burries from Arizona, Mikael Brown Jr. from Louisville, and LeBaron Bylon Jr. Mm-hmm. These are all great, talented players, and especially with a lot of these teams in this lottery of, like, I would argue, like 2 to 10,
mm-hmm.
that really could use a lead guard or a secondary guard as a playmaker that could really impact their teams at this time.
Yes, and something that we had talked about, I think, previously on the lottery recap was, there are teams where, at the moment, point guard is not a pressing issue because of who they have. But it's going to be at a certain point. Now, in Dallas, that point might be sooner rather than later because there are many rumors out there of Kyrie Irving, now that he's going to be healthy, getting flipped to go somewhere else, which makes a lot of sense. Because the Dallas team that he signed with is not exactly the Dallas team that he's with today. So that is that's an issue right there where now that they're on a different, to use that word again, timeline, building around Cooper Flagg as opposed to the Luka Doncic trade, one of the worst trades in North American sports in the 21st century, might as well get something, get some assets for Kyrie and move on. So you may be in immediate need of your point guard of the future. It's not as urgent in Atlanta. And Atlanta is a team that, again, look, they were up 2-1 on a team that went on to win the NBA Finals. So they're not that far away, the Atlanta Hawks.
No.
And so for the short term, they're smart to ride it out with CJ McCollum. And I know that I'd said to you, I don't remember if it was on air or off air, but it was like, man, like that guy, like when he got to Atlanta, it was, it's hard to gauge any of these guys, right? When you're in like a New Orleans or a Washington or whatever, or just one of these sewer type situations. But like that guy in Atlanta, and it's like, man, he's been around a long time, but he's still got enough left in the can. But like, what an admirable situation that is for Atlanta. You got to, if you take like a Mikael Brown or somebody like that, or Flemings to learn behind McCollum, holy crap, what a great spot that would be, right?
Yeah, and it's a great opportunity in Atlanta too. And again, another guy who has been flying up the boards in recent memory, Deymara is another guy that they could take there too, because they definitely need center depth at this time. So it's going to be an interesting sort of scenario with a lot of these teams in the upper part of the lottery. It's like they're rebuilding, they're reforming, but this outside of the top four at this time, Rick, we both know that it could be, it depends on who likes who at this point. And I would say a lot of the guards that are a part of this draft are going to be NBA caliber players, rotation guys, at least on the worst. So I don't think you can really go wrong by picking anyone in this class. I don't really think they're, it's not, I don't feel like it's going to fall off the cliff.
Exactly. And I have to say also too, there was something that occurred to me after we did our lottery recap. It didn't occur to me until I was starting to work on the draft guide and starting to look at my mock draft. And then we will also have in a mock draft from Don Peterson in the guide here. He's still working on some late revisions on his. I think I've got mine just about done. I think both of us had Nate Ament going to Milwaukee there with the thought that, again, you're probably going to be moving Giannis. You're probably going to need somebody at the four spot, whatever. And again, I am somebody where, you know, in a lot of different sports tend to root for and tend to be a fan of the Tennessee Volunteers. And I'm looking at this and it's like, oh, this poor kid, he is going to go there. Because guess who's calling the shots right now in Milwaukee, Ben Chu?
Guess who?
And Jimmy Haslam loves his Vols. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. I mean, I see it in Cleveland with the Browns. Like, this poor kid, he's doomed. The Bucks are about to become the Browns now that Jimmy Haslam's in charge. So my heart goes out to the kid. But there are some interesting talents here. And that, again, you're looking at a really, really interesting situation here when you look at the three players who were the most key to Michigan winning the national championship. You've got center Adeyemara. You've got power forward Axel Landeberg, who, again, they got him last year. As I was talking to you off air, he dabbled with coming into the draft last year, came back to play basketball, transferred to Michigan, and the rest is history. And then Morris Johnson, additionally, another center for Michigan. The rotation that you had in the front court with the three of those guys was just unholy, and you know, a dominant reason they ended up winning the national championship. So where these guys end up going, I think most people have them going anywhere late lottery to mid-teens to probably late teens at the very latest. But the three players from the national championship squad are going to factor very, very strongly in here. And when you're looking at teams like, again, I keep saying this about Oklahoma City, but it's true that they're going to have to make a decision on Isaiah Hartenstein, what they're going to do with him, with what they're paying him. Is that going to be sustainable going forward now that you're paying the big three? I've seen some reportage out there. They're like, well, they are actually going to try and work out something with him because they feel like they may have to, because it'll be a step back for them dealing with Wemby if they don't have him and they can't afford any steps backward. My sense is Oklahoma City is going to keep trying to load up on big men in the draft. So any of these guys could become a part of that puzzle there. And when you look at it also in Charlotte, like, man, if Charlotte had an impact center, like how scary would they be right now? So there are a couple of teams that are going to be in that spot that could be poised to benefit from these guys being on the board.
Yeah. And on top of too, like what we, I know we'll talk, we've mentioned like a handful of teams right now, especially like if we're looking from like 13 to 20, which is in order, Miami, Charlotte, the Bulls, Memphis, OKC, second pick, and the Hornets again.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these draft picks are going to be used on rotation guys that are going to need to be directly impactful for these rosters, because we saw in the finals what good depth can do, essentially. If you can have 9 or 10 guys that can get minutes and get you to a finals, you're going to have a very good chance of winning.
Yes, that is absolutely the case. And I have to say it, I'll be very interested to, and this is really sort of a sort of nerdy basketball humor observation that I have, but I'll be interested to see when I get Don P's second mock draft, because in the one that he sent me that he is now making revisions on, he had Coapete going to Detroit. And if that ends up being the thing, I'm going to have to ask him during the draft show, Don Peterson, answer me honestly, is this wish casting? Are you looking for Detroit to take one more guy who can't shoot presently? You know, like, because I mean, I like to see it rather than like Isaiah Evans or something like that. Like, oh crap, I don't need them drafting anybody like him. So Don having him take Coapete is definitely a choice.
Yeah, and we'll see. And also we'll have to know too, Rick, there are some guys in the tail end of this draft too that are going to be very interesting. Guys like mm-hmm. Thomas, Alex Caravan, Joshua Jefferson, Alan Graves, Isaiah Evans. I mean, there's going to be talented players that will be in NBA rotations upcoming from some of these guys, essentially.
Yes. And when you're talking about pure centers, while he can also play power forward, but Hannes Steinbach from Washington, that's a guy that's got the body to be able to come in there in the pivot and give you that kind of solid physicality that you need. That's another guy that figures to go either at the tail end of the lottery or just beyond the tail end of the lottery. So you've got him there. And when you're talking about players that have some of the biggest ranges out there, Kareem Lopez, who played in New Zealand and is, I believe he has a chance to become the first Mexican national to go in the first round of the NBA draft. That's a guy where, again, opinions on him are really kind of polarizing, as they sometimes are with the international talents here. The whole thing of like, well, how's he going to fit in? Is he a little bit raw? What does that end up looking like? So he's a classic example of somebody like there was in Don P's most recent mock draft, he had him going, I think, like tail end of the lottery. I got him going like 25 to the Lakers. That's a guy where either one of us could be right. I think it's a coin flip with him.
Right. And so, he's a very interesting just product overall. Mm-hmm. And during his time in New Zealand, when he was playing with the Breakers, I mean, there was also, you could just see his defensive versatility at his height, his ability to hit three-point shots. He's probably the biggest question in this draft right now. It feels like a lot of these guys we kind of have full knowledge of, but Lopez, he has the opportunity and the ability to kind of, how do I say this properly, turn himself into either a starter in the NBA or a guy who's part of a rotation, who's like your seventh or eighth guy, that can be an impact player. And I feel like, too, especially with this draft, there are guys we know that are ready-made products that are going to play really well, but then there'll be some guys who we aren't 100% sure of, but have the opportunity, like Lopez does, to being a real factor on an NBA roster.
Well, and again, you always give yourself a better chance for playing time if you're a multi-positional player. He certainly projects as a swing forward at 6'9", 220. He could play either spot potentially, so that's going to help out a lot. Now, when you and I did the post-lottery show, you wisely had suggested that we hold off until after the combine so that we could evaluate some of the developments from the combine. And I know that we made note of this at the time, but as I dubbed them at the time, the CCs, if your initial was CC, it was a good combine for you. So whether it be Chris Senek, the power forward / center from Houston, 6'11", 230, or Cameron Carr, another collegiate player from the state of Texas, this time Baylor, 6'6", 180 shooting guard. So those guys really distinguished themselves and had a strong combine. And those are guys where, to me, they're a lock to be in the top 20. I don't really at the moment see either of them going as high as the end of the lottery, but it wouldn't shock me if either one of them did.
Right. And again, it's very, those narratives are still very early in the process too. And there's still, again, we know the draft is only a week away, but there's still so much post NBA finals. There's going to be a lot of chatter. There's going to be a lot of teams make moves. We may see a Giannis trade. We just don't know at this period of time.
Yes.
What sort of these draft plans will be growing outside of maybe the top four, which seem pretty locked in at this period of time. I think we could see it specifically. It goes to the Clippers pick. Whoever the Clippers decide is their guard of the future will determine essentially how the rest of this lottery goes.
Well, I will say this, and I've made the joke on the show previously, history moving backwards since 2000 in the Eastern Conference. So last year you had Indiana winning the Eastern Conference. This year it was the Knicks, as they both did in 2000 and in 99. All I know is the 98 Bulls were built around a player from North Carolina, and this year they're looking to take Caleb Wilson. So is next year their year, Ben Chu?
Yeah, we never know. We've had over the last couple NBA drafts, they've been more star-studded at the top.
Yeah.
But this one seems like a very deep core of players.
It does. And this is one of these things where, and again, I think to a degree, and I think this is a very, very welcome development because I think it is potentially lasting. And then, like, look, and we can sit here and, like, there is much to bemoan about the Wild Wild West nature right now with NIL, the transfer portal, all that kind of stuff. And the way that the courts, quite frankly, weigh in on these things here. We saw it with Sorsby and the Texas Tech quarterback situation here, and that he's going to be allowed to play in the fall. A guy who has bet on his own team previously, games that his own team has played. So there's much to bemoan about that. But if you're just looking at it from the basketball purist standpoint of the fact that especially internationally, and you look at Igor Dimin a year ago who went in the lottery, who played at BYU. Like, that's a classic example of a guy who probably would have played EuroLeague, and we would have had him like, well, I don't quite know how to compare it's apples to oranges. But no, he came over and he played at BYU, and you could see him against other collegiate competition. One of the things that NIL is doing is luring these players from overseas, and that to me is a welcome development. Because just imagine if Luka Doncic years ago, 2018, I think, if he wasn't like a blank, thing on a piece of paper, like I don't quite know what to make of him. Like I remember at the time you said, that again, probably the best player in the draft. And, you were ahead of the curve on him a little bit, but you had to squint to extrapolate. I think this is one of these things now where I think that as you're getting more and more players that are coming from overseas, and that's not necessarily the story of this year's draft. This year's draft, you're looking at American kids that are at the top. But I think what makes it more sustainable year to year as far as having franchise players, potential franchise players going at the top, is that we have a clearer view of what these guys might be than we used to, because it's apples to apples in terms of the competition that they're playing. And you saw it in college basketball this past year. A lot of the players that we talked about as far as going in the top 10 in the draft, they anchored teams that went deep in the tournament and were towards the top of the standings all year long. And that you and I had talked about this, that like college basketball regular season, it's actually it's gotten like strangely hot in a way that it never was. Like I remember, I've said this before, I remember, I think it was 2009, like North Carolina and Texas played I think it was a November game at Jerry World, and nobody cared. Like, it didn't get any attention. Like, if that happened today, like, they'd be talking about it on TV for days ahead of time. And I think that's what it is. It's the depth of these players that, again, you're looking at superstar-type players, in the first three spots here. I think potentially Acuff as well. But a number of other star players as well right behind them. And that kind of depth of guys that can come in and help change the league collectively with this draft class – again, year to year, this may not be as big of an outlier in the future as perhaps it's been in the past, and that'll be a welcome thing for the NBA.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this as almost a pattern. Like every 5 to 10 drafts, we have the elite ones of the elite classes, but then we also have ones that are pretty deep. And this one will definitely be a deep draft of a bunch of guys who will be starters. And there's an opportunity that, you know, the Vancia or Darren Peterson or Acuff or, you know, Boozer become superstars.
Yes.
And I feel like we're in a timeline too where the way the game is being played in the regular season, you really need to have a team of guys that you can go into your bench, go into your rotations, 9-10 deep, just to play. And I feel like a lot of these guys have the talent and have the ability to make an impact on the in the pro game.
Yes. And this is a thing where, again, and, you know, you and I have talked in years past a decent degree about the NBA Summer League and about getting to see and kind of extrapolate off of things that are happening there. I mean, like, this draft with a lot of the players that we're talking about here, like, I this is going to be one of the most fascinating summer leagues we've seen. And I think to some degree it'll factor in as well, like, who we end up getting from last year's draft class that comes. Like, it would be great to think that, like, Knupel will be there or Edgecombe or whatever. I'm not holding my breath. But something tells me Dylan Harper is not going to be there either. But it's going to be just fascinating to see how so many of these guys play in the competition here. Normally there's like 1, 2, 3, 4 guys, maybe 5 at the most, where you might just be like, it will be amazing to get to see what they do against this kind of competition. And this year you're counting really more towards 10, if not maybe even a little bit beyond that.
Yeah. And we also have to note too, the second round, there are definitely some diamonds in the rough down there too. So
yes,
especially in today's game where you need offensive talent and you need athletic guys who can space the floor.
Yeah.
There's an opportunity for a lot of these players to really make an impact, or even not even right away. They could be going to their team's G League affiliate. We will be hearing about them 2 to 3 years from now.
That's right. And this is a thing where, again, we've kind of joked about this on the show previously that like the NBA likes to act like it's, you know, making all kinds of great progress when really it's just catching up to other sports like baseball as far as development and stuff. And I remember, what was it, like 2 years ago, where it was like, for the first time, every team in the league will have a G League affiliate. Like, it's kind of embarrassing that that hasn't been the case for 20 years now, really. But, it is a point in time where, again, and the teams out there that have been, and you and I have tracked player development on the show, and the way the teams have done it very strongly since at least 2020. And one of the teams that is unsurprisingly the strongest at it, Miami, what they used to do there, I don't know what they still do, but like what they used to be one of the rare teams to do it, of like they implement everything at where were their affiliate at, I think at the time, Sioux Falls or whatever, but they're doing everything there. They're structuring everything as they do with the big club. And now you're seeing a lot more of that sort of across the board, which again, catching up to what a lot of these teams should have been doing anyways previously, but it's happening now and it is allowing more and more teams, at least the ones that are doing it the right way, to be able to develop players like this. And this kind of goes to, I said to FDH Lounge dignitary, Joe Stazak recently, we were talking a little bit about Mike Gansey going to Philadelphia to become their new head of basketball operations. And I said to him, like, man, you guys really need player development here. You guys really need somebody to come in and like be able to develop these young players. And he comes out of a Cavs system where they've been very good at doing that for a long period of time and squeezing a lot of value out of guys that are not on big contracts. So as you start to see that, now Philadelphia, I project, will become a team that's a lot more like that. And you start to see it spread around the league more as far as how teams put these systems in place to be able to get the most out of these young players, and even ones that most observers might not see as much value in.
Right. And I think also, too, due to the salary cap and the first and second aprons,
yep,
teams have to be much more efficient with their cash.
Yes.
In terms of the guys they bring in. So gone are the days of you're going to just bring in a veteran player. You have to think about, well, will this put us over the apron? Will it put us in the luxury tax? There's just so many little machinations now you have to look at. And especially now teams needing more depth more than ever, you have to pretty much hit most of the time on these first and second round picks.
You do. There's really no margin for error. You got to be able to hit on them if you're going to stay in a strong position. Because the teams that don't end up having to go make other moves to do that. And I think, again, it's it's harder to do. I compared a little bit in the previous segment what Leon Rose has done with trading away the first round picks that he did for Mikal Bridges, and saying that like it's a situation where because they are late first round picks, it's not quite the same thing as Les Snead trading away a bunch of late first round picks year after year for the Rams. Because in the NFL, you still have a chance of getting really, really good talent, potentially even star players late in the first round. It doesn't happen nearly as much in the NBA. And that's a thing where, again, I would look at this and I would just say that, like, in the NBA, if I'm going to take the NFL comparison a step further, there's not really the opportunity to recover from if you have a fumbled late first round pick as there is in the NFL, because years ago, this would have been, I believe, the 2020 draft. So the 2020 NFL draft, Chris Galloway and I, FDH Lounge original dignitary, he and I were doing a Facebook Live covering the draft. And when the Eagles took Jalen Reagor at, I think, 21, we were like, no, how did you pass on Justin Jefferson? And then come to find out, they shouldn't have passed on Justin Jefferson. So what do? They trade for A.J. Brown. They end up making it to one Super Bowl, winning another. Then they flip A.J. Brown for a first-round pick. So, like, it worked out. In the NBA, and again, I guess we're not talking about, like, late first-round picks because, as I've said before, you're mostly just looking for a lottery pick there. What would the equivalent be in the NBA? Probably like a top 10 pick somewhere in there. If you screw up a top 10 pick or a top 12 pick, you cannot recover nearly as easily as Howie Roseman did. Now, I realize Howie Roseman is one of the top general managers in the NFL, although, as I've said, he's also sort of the J.R. Smith of general managers. Like, some days you love him and some days you hate him if he's with your team. You love him more than you hate him, but Howie Roseman's had his ups and downs. But in the NBA, you can't recover. There's no like, oh, okay, we shouldn't have taken Jalen Reagor. We'll just go out and make up for it. Doesn't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often.
No. And by the way, they were trading for A.J. Brown, like, I think, like, past his rookie contract. So it was like, you could have had Justin Jefferson on a rookie contract. So it even gets worse because you factor that in. And these players here, again, you're getting them on rookie deals. Look at San Antonio right now. I mean, they're the ultimate sort of poster children for that. The last 3 years, Wemby, Castle, and Harper, all on rookie deals. And nobody else is probably going to get lucky enough where this is going to be the case. I mean, like, you know, I think that DeBanza, I mean, I think the sky is the limit for him as a player, but like, is he going to carry the rest of what Washington has around him to the finals in the next 3 years? I think not. So now Utah, I will say this, Utah, and I know they're going to be like super disappointed if they end up getting, Peterson instead of DeBanza. Nothing against Peterson, but like they got a big love bone for DeBanza going back years and years and years. But it's like, I just look at it like, man, him and Ace Bailey as the guys that you're building around, you know, and then you got, you know, George at point guard there. Like, this is the time when you can finally, because I don't think Markkanen is really on their timeline at this point, you know, flip Markkanen for something else. And it's like Utah, you know, if you're looking for another team in the Western Conference that could maybe duplicate the come-ups that Houston and especially OKC and San Antonio have had the last couple of years, it sounds ludicrous to say it now, but it would have sounded ludicrous to say it 2 years ago that it would be San Antonio. Look out for Utah in the next 2 to 3 years, man.
Yeah, they're going to be a very good team, and I don't even nearly think they'd even need to flip Martin in because they already acquired him with Jaren Jackson Jr. at this period of time. So I guess you're just
true.
Adding to the narrative, and again, too, they were one of the poster childs for tanking this season.
Yeah.
But when they were playing well, they were really playing well. So,
yeah.
Utah has a very good opportunity to get back into the conversation in terms of the elite teams in the West.
They do.
And it feels like, too, like, even for the Wizards, like, look, the East is still wide open, in my personal opinion. Like, obviously, sure, the Knicks and the Celtics are the favorites right now, but there's just so many other teams that are on the up and up, and we just do not know who will win next season.
And that's what makes it interesting. But this is the beginning of doing it all again here. We just we ended up commemorating the end of the 2025-2026 NBA season by talking about the finals in the last segment here. We're already kicking off the next season, or at the very least, the hot and heavy part of the off season, which generally speaking will last until about mid to late July. Now, some of this is going to depend on how long it takes a Giannis trade to shake out, how long it takes LeBron's moves to shake out. But in both cases, you do have the feeling that everybody involved is going to be trying to make things happen closer to July 1st, or potentially even in a Giannis trade, potentially even draft night. So we'll have to see on that. And again, this is one of these situations where, again, if you're Milwaukee, I mean, presumably you are accepting that you are in for a rebuild at this point, and probably a steep one if you let go of Giannis. So what the assets end up looking like in return, and again, it's always the trade of, like, if you're trading him to a team that's really good or projects to be really good, then you're looking at late first round picks, unless they're holding picks from other teams here. So that's what kind of complicates these matters going forward.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens, what Milwaukee decides to do with the Giannis trade, and sort of where his destinations will be, will also impact this draft. I don't think it's going to happen before the NBA draft. Could happen during it, could happen after. So it'll be very telling to see how Milwaukee decides to start their rebuild.
Yes, and that's going to be a thing here where it's so funny when you look at it that, like, with the league changing, like, this is the last draft that we are going to do under the system that hugely, hugely prioritized tanking, as we saw very painfully during this season here. But that, again, Washington had already traded for Anthony Davis and for Trae Young. They were already, even before knowing that they were going to be picking very high here, they were already looking ahead to next year and being better and starting the upswing. Ditto with Utah, with getting Jaren Jackson Jr., same kind of a thing there. So you look at it, and it's like, outside of, like, Sacramento, who, even if they get somebody as excellent as Kingston Fleming's, is still probably going to be the drizzle and shiznits at this point. Like, most of the teams that were tanking are probably going to be in position to do better next year and have a realistic chance of being in that 4-10 range, really more like 4 or 5, but still. Aside from, like I said, Sacramento, and aside from Milwaukee, which has yet to even tank. Like, if Milwaukee goes into a rebuild, it's going to be at the worst possible time here. So, yeah, that's – and you now have – once, I can't stress this enough, you now have Jimmy Haslam as the lead guy in ownership at this point in time. So, as somebody who's always followed the Cleveland Browns, good luck with that, Milwaukee. My heart goes out to you. So – The landscape of the league next year, yeah, again, we start to see it get reshaped in earnest with this draft, with a draft that, again, as we've talked about here, again, has a chance to be historic. When you're talking about especially the two players at the top, potentially even the third player with Boozer, and then any of these point guards. Like, these point guards, to me, are all going to be stars, and a couple of them have a decent chance of becoming superstars. So a draft class, Ben, I think, to sum it all up, that has an excellent chance to be a historic one, and one of the ones that we look back on and say, man, what a crop that year yielded.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting to see it, because as we know, after the first four picks, it's Clippers could go any direction, and there's going to be a lot of possible jostling up into the lottery as well via trade.
There will be, yeah. So we'll be here to watch it all go down. And again, with our good friend and fellow Sports Talk Network alumnus, Don Peterson of Peterson Media, he will be joining us on draft night. So don't you dare miss it as we get ready for that one. So I will be very, very interested to see how all of this shakes out. But Ben, truly appreciate having you here as always, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Appreciate it, Ben. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1932.